It's nice to be together. Paul Gulf sends his apologies. He's away preaching somewhere, so he's not here tonight. That's where he is. I'm not sure quite where he is. So I was going to give a little intro, and then I thought we could work through the content in the notebook. And for me, this sitting around a table and having food together is also kind of part of this. I'm reading this book that Duncan's recommended called The Other Half of Church, and it's talking about how very often we encounter God and we are transformed in our behavior and life, not through just absorbing some academic information, but in through the way that we feel love and relate to each other. And that, I think, right side of the brain type experience being such a key part of our transformation. So, you know, I think as we're on this journey together as church, it's something that we're doing together, isn't it? And it's an exploratory journey that we're on, and so great that we can do it around a table in closeness and warmth. And I think for my introduction now, I wanted to just say a little bit about the journey and how we journey this together as a church, and some thoughts that I've got. So I've got 4 points that I wanted to share. The first one is I was thinking just this week how. Is the problem with the whole world that for everybody, whether they're atheist or whatever religion they are, or Christian, can every problem be rooted back to a twisted or distorted idea of an understanding of who God is? That's my kind of thought experiment, and just thinking that, you know, Jesus, obviously the most explicit revelation of God that we have had, I suppose, and he was constantly surprising people, wasn't he, about what God was like and behaving in ways that challenged perceptions and understandings and existing mindsets. That was my first thought, something I've just been pondering. And I was thinking about some friends of mine who is not a Christian family, and I see a lot of pain that they're in, and I'm wondering, they wouldn't say they've got anything to do with God in their life, and they describe themselves as atheists. But I wonder how much of the pain and stuff that they're experiencing is actually is linked to a reaction to how they perceive God to be. Again, that's just my thought experiment, really. That was my first thing. The second one was I guess in terms of where I'm at with this journey with the Trinitarian faith course, there's bits of it that I love and I think are brilliant. And then I said this to Paul the other day. There are bits of it that I don't really agree with. I think it's particularly good for people who've had experiences of evangelical Christianity, which has been overly heavy. And I guess, you know, that's Baxter's experience, isn't it? He's come from an extreme Calvinist experience, and Paul from a more extreme Pentecostal. And there's a great, I think, correction and or rebalancing of some of those things. I personally think it swings too far in some ways. I was saying to Paul the other day, you know, I find that deeply uncomfortable that I'm not exactly on the same page with you on all of these things. I want to be just championing you 100% and saying I'm so for this, I'm so for you. I do really like you. And please can we still be friends even if we come to the end of this, you know, and we're not like exactly on the same page. He's like, of course, you know. But I think that's also a challenge of our time. And, you know, the history of the Protestant church is people get into their little niche. And they're like, oh, can't be friends with you, can't be in fellowship with you because you don't have my same view on this. We'll go and start a new church. And you get that continual schism. And at the moment, we're seeing this horrible polarization around the world, aren't we, of people clinging to their tribe. And you know, it's just people that think the same as me or see the world the same as me. And I think the beauty of church and its design is that we should be able to present a better way, which is that we love each other first. We love Jesus and so I don't want to have a sort of an official hope line on this is our doctrinal basis. You need to have to be part of hope. Of course there'll be a culture and there'll be sort of like the theology that Alice and I have as leaders will obviously sort of have a significant impact. But I don't want us to have to say you've got to sign up to this exact worldview and mindset in order to feel like at home here. And I think that will be a prophetic and powerful something for the world. That was my second point. What was my third one? Oh, my third one. I might have shared this before, actually, on a Sunday in a talk, maybe a few times. And I think, again, a bit of personal testimony of, I think, what this teaching has helped me in is I used to find on Sunday mornings, for me, there's always a dynamic of the sovereignty of God versus the stewardship that we are called to and entrusted with. And where does the sort of boundary lie? And I probably sway a bit too closely to it's all on me, sort of stewardship side. That's often my kind of wrestle. And so the dynamic often for me on Sunday mornings was that I would actually have quite a lot of diarrhea on Sunday mornings. That would be my normal Sunday. I'd feel this real pressure because I want people to come to Hope, have a powerful encounter with God. And I kind of somehow felt that was on my shoulders. And I mean, there is a measure in which it is, in terms of I'm involved in leading this church, and so I do have an influence, but at the same time, I can't make that happen. And what was wonderful and changed my metabolism, I suppose, my bodily functions, was sitting in that image of the Trinity and sitting in that relationship with Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And just a kind of a minute or so of sort of meditating on that is my position and my posture, changed my bodily functions, to be more graphic than I'm comfortable in being normally, but I think it shows an example of the health and life that can come from a more healthy adaptation and understanding of what God's like. So that was my third point, and I think my fourth one. My fourth little example was I was at an event, church leaders event. It was a talk from a kind of big cheese speaker, maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, and it was an all-day thing. And I was really inspired by what this guy was saying in the morning. I thought it was brilliant, really loved it. And one of the things he was saying was that he could see, he's talking about understanding the times that we're in. He was saying that various things are being shaken and changed and sort of fresh perspectives coming and sort of new wineskins coming. And he was being explicit on a few things. But then I said to him at the lunch break, in terms of these things that are being shaken and sort of reassessed, you know, is penal substitution one of those things that you see? Because I've found a sort of that's one of the things that I found very helpful is being the sort of questioning of that the nature of that penal substitution thing, and I've come to find that quite liberating and exciting. And he was like, "Oh no, I'm totally fine with penal substitution, and that's not one of the areas I'm thinking of." And then I've watched in my heart my attitude after lunch in the afternoon. I just basically didn't really have much interest in what he had to say. He'd like totally gone down in my estimation, and I thought, just spotting it in myself, this sort of tribalism, and it's like, I see that thing in my heart of like, you're not, you haven't got the revelation, you know. And so I was like, and I guess that was my kind of fourth point was this. It kind of ties in with the second point about tribalism. I don't want us to be a church that's tribal, that it has some people that are in this camp, some that are in that camp, you know. So I just want to encourage you, if you see that, if you smell that in yourself, I'm not convinced that's the way of Jesus, and I certainly don't want it in myself. So they're my four little four just reflections on the journey so far, or aspects of it for me. And I do think it's a privilege that we're doing this and that we're asking these questions. And I think as we've said, you know, it's for some people it's an unnerving thing to be asking these questions, and it's a bit destabilizing. I certainly find it makes me, you know, question lots of stuff, and parts of that are a bit scary. I'm like, you know, what? How can I? I don't know. I don't think I understand this anymore. And but I think this is the right thing to be doing. And I do feel, though my perspective is, I think there's bits of it that are an overswing and aren't quite right. I do think there's been some. It feels like it's a prophetic thing happening within the church. I feel there's part of that, within part of this, it's partly the maturing of the bride. It's of Christ, you know, as the church. There's we're privileged in being part of understanding and showing God, showing the world God in a better and more healthy way, I feel. So I feel like we're in a privileged place to be on this journey. And yeah, can I pray for this evening? Lord, thank you that we get to be here. Thank you for the privilege of being part of your church. And we come to you in humility as much as we can, and we say, will you lead us, Jesus, into all truth? Will you reveal Christ to us? Will you take away, make us aware of, and strip away from us lies that we've believed, ways that we're misunderstanding and not seeing clearly, and where wounding has distorted our understanding of you and the world and life, and lead us into joy, freedom, fullness, overflow, so that we can serve you, love you, and live life to the full, live life in all its fullness, as you said, Jesus, and share that goodness with the world. Amen. Cool. So the first part of the, so we're on chapter 8, aren't we? It's week 8. And the reflection and exercise at the beginning was to look at this. How many points? There's an 18-point list here of the Trinitarian vision. And then the exercise is choose 4 or 5 of the points above and consider which scriptures speak most directly to them. So it might be that you want to pick out 1 or 2, reading through that. Which are something there that stands out to you? Oh yeah, thanks, Olivia. I would recommend you read through that list of 18 points and just ask God to highlight one of them to you, and then to go into that. So that's the exercise at the beginning. And so we'll do that for about 15 minutes. Yeah, I think do it individually to start with, and then talk about it as a group. So maybe just share one, choose one each.